Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. And with me today, I have Kelly Gaumont. How's it going, Kelly?
It's going pretty well, Jeff. How about you?
I'm doing all right. And Jeff Butts, glad you are here.
I'm glad to be here as well.
It's great to have both of you here. It's also great that iMazing Mini is our sponsor today. And, you know, we might as well just jump right into it. So, Jeff, you did a how-to yesterday that I kind of want to dive into. And okay. I guess when I say kind of want to dive into, I want to dive into it because that's actually what we're about to do. And the how-to was on a big change in the way setting up devices can work in iOS 11. So what exactly is that?
So now, I mean, it's always been the case where you would pair your Apple Watch with your iPhone. Well, now you can do that same sort of thing with another iOS device running iOS 11. So they've made some changes to how the setup process goes with the watch, but bigger changes in iOS.
Okay, so now on the watch, the way it works with iOS 10 and watch OS 3 is that you get the little pixel cloud on the watch.
And blue blob of dots.
Yep. Yeah, that thing. And then you take your iPhone and the setup, the watch app has a little square. You line it up with that dot cloud. Yep. And then it pairs the devices. And then and then you can get settings and stuff from your phone pushed over to your watch. And so that's what I'm familiar with. So is this new thing in iOS 11 for our other devices like that?
Very similar to that. When you start up your iOS device, your new iOS device for the first time, if your iPhone is near it, you're going to get a little pop-up window on your older iOS device that says, do you want to pair your new device with this device? Use this device to help set it up. And if you say yes, then it gives you the funny blue blob of dots and you take a picture of it.
So like if I go and get a new iPad and once iOS 11 is out, mm-hmm. and I turn the thing on, my iPhone's in my pocket, I'm going to get a notification that says, hey, new device, want me to?
No.
No.
You've got to have it work? Closer than that. You've got to have it closer than that.
So this is something where I have to be aware I can do this so that I can have my iPhone at the ready when I start.
Yeah, or it just happens by accident like it happened with me. And I think it's communicating through Bluetooth low energy.
Okay.
Is what I think is happening, which doesn't have as much range as classic Bluetooth.
Okay. So, which is how the AirPods work. You need to have them very close-ish to your iPhone. You'll flip up the lid, and then everything's paired.
Right.
But now, is this...
Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, is this similar to what we used to have that was sort of the secret Apple TV configuration, where if you took your iPhone and you bonked it kind of on the top of the Apple TV, then it would be paired up as the remote, and you could control it easily to get all the setup stuff going?
Yeah, similar to that.
Okay.
It transfers over your Wi-Fi passwords. It transfers over your Siri, some of your Siri data. Some of your analytics settings get transferred over.
Interesting.
Yep.
I really like that that's a thing that's happening. One of the things that I think is really interesting is the number of different ways I have seen Wi-Fi setup approached. Mm-hmm. I have a sprinkler system, an automated sprinkler system brain for the underground sprinklers. And it had me hold the camera of my phone up to a piece, to a sensor, basically, in the box itself mm-hmm. for the sprinklers. And it flashed light in a particular sequence to transmit the password to the, which I thought was really interesting. And
then three squirrels around you had epileptic seizures.
Yeah.
Well, I was in the garage, so I hope not. And then
mice. Also, then.
Yeah, maybe mice. And I've also seen where the Belkin, the Wemo switches, will also you connect to the its own little Wi-Fi network, and then you feed it all of the Wi-Fi information that way. So it's interesting to me to see the approaches that people have, because when you don't have to retype it every time, it makes it much easier to make that password very secure.
Yes.
So I've been curious how other people are going to do that. And I'm really glad that Apple has taken this opportunity to make some of this stuff easier. It makes sense. And it's one of those things that you sort of wonder why they haven't tackled sooner, almost, because obviously they want to make it as easy as possible for you to have new stuff so that you can have new stuff.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Now, since you've had a chance to play with this, Jeff, and I have not, because my iPhone 7 is still on iOS 10. I haven't taken it to the developer beta yet for 11.
No guts, no glory.
I know. Clearly, there's a line for me. I will rush in where angels fear to tread, but only to a point. So I have two iPads that I've been running on developer beta. One of them, since the very first day developer beta for iOS 11 was available. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't taken my iPhone that far yet. But here's the thing. So after playing with this, do you think for the average user, this is going to make setting up a new device easier?
Yes, I do. If they already have an iOS device, it's what I'm really impressed with. And I've heard a couple people make fun of this. But what I'm really impressed with are the tutorials that they've added into watchOS 4.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait. Tutorials.
Tell me
about this. I do not know.
I actually don't. So I really do want to know what's going on with this.
You need to read my articles.
I just haven't seen this one. I've had a lot going on in the last
week. I understand. So while you're waiting, you know, it takes forever for your watch to pair up with your iPhone. So while you're waiting, you can now flip through three different tutorials. One on different ways to use the home screen, the display of the watch. One on different ways to use a digital crown. And one on different ways to use the side button.
Interesting.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about. Some people have been making fun of that. Like, well, geez, if Apple devices are so easy to use, why do you need something like that to tell you how? Okay, it doesn't matter how easy something is. It's always the first time for someone.
So absolutely. So
having something that gives you a foundation to work from makes sense. I mean, if you're going to take the idea of if they're so easy, why do you need those tutorials? If they're so easy, why does Apple include that little fold-out card with their devices that tells you how to get started? Mm-hmm. You know, even like with the AirPods, which is as simple as you flip open the lid and you're done. Mm-hmm. There's a little card in there that says flip open the lid and then you're done. Oh, mm-hmm. And if you tap your AirPods like this, now you can talk to Siri. Go have fun.
Makes sense. And the other thing is that a lot of times, like when I talk to people who actually walk through those tutorials, a lot of people do, you know, just not use them or walk through them really quickly and don't actually look at anything, just keep clicking next until they're done. And it seems like I know a number of people who are very Mac savvy, very iOS savvy. And every once in a while, one of these tutorials walks through and says, you know, did you know that you could do this thing if you push the side button while you stand on one foot or whatever? Right. And people don't know. I mean, like each one of us, I'm sure, has the experience of having done something on your computer that somebody else, you know, who is also very technically savvy, very on top of things, you know, utilizes technology all day long. And you know, you did some secret key command or you used mm-hmm. like the services menu to do something and the person with you just went, oh, what did you just do? That was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, I never tell anybody this stuff because I just assume everybody knows all the stuff that I know. It's not like I keep any of it secret.
Right.
So those tutorials, like I have found it is worth my time to go through them because it always seems like there's at least like one thing that it's telling me that I didn't know you could do with that, whatever it was. So it's part of why the Apple support Twitter account is really useful to me, because they put up little videos about, did you know how to switch from here to here, like, easily, yeah, or whatever. And I, wow, you know, actually I didn't know that. That's pretty awesome. And, you know, people do it all the time, and, you know, not everybody realizes, you know, like,
right,
not everybody knows what everybody knows.
And,
so,
and Apple's done the tutorials the right way in watchOS 4. They don't force you to go through them. They're there if you want them.
And that is one thing I remember about Android, was that some of it was like, no, we're going to walk you through this. Oh, it, yeah, might be your 10th Android phone. It matters not.
And you still are going to force you to do this.
I remember being, mm-hmm, very frustrated by that.
Yeah.
That's kind of annoying. Anyhow, so I am pleased with these changes. I think that this is going to make it a lot easier for people that aren't as steeped in this technology as we, yeah, are, to be able to set up their new devices without feeling frustrated or intimidated. At least I hope that's how it works out. So I think that's great. I'm glad that those tutorials are there. It addresses something that I've had to handle myself with people many times after they've bought an, mm-hmm, Apple Watch, where I sit down and give them their own private tutorial. Now it'll be right on the wrist while they're setting up. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I also think it's awesome that iMazing Mini is our sponsor today. And if you're not familiar with iMazing Mini, here's the deal. It's a tool that you put on your computer to back up your iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. And it works great because it does what you want a backup for your iOS devices to do, instead of just simply what you get out of iTunes. And, you know, for some people, just letting iTunes or an iCloud backup happen is good enough because that's all they want. But if you actually want to, like, really take control over what's happening with your iOS device backups, and you want to be able to have, like, versioning for your backups, so you can get back to part of a backup that happened a week ago, as opposed to just having a snapshot that you restore and that's it, iMazing Mini is going to make that happen for you. You can back up to an external drive. So if you want to keep your iOS backups on a different drive, then you can do that. Get them off your main computer and maybe toss them in a safe deposit box somewhere. You have all kinds of control with this, and it's an incredibly useful tool. And get this, it is free. So all you have to do is fire up your favorite web browser on your computer, head over to the iMazing website, and that's imazing.com, imazing.com/mini. And when you're there, you can download iMazing Mini. It's free. And not free as in here's a trial, not free as in here's a limited version, and when you pay, you get the rest of the features. It's free as in free, which is, yep, really cool. So you have this very powerful, very flexible backup tool that you can use to back up all the content in your iOS device, selectively back up content on your iOS device, and restore content as well. It's just slick, it's easy, it's fast, and it's free. So go pick up your copy, iMazing Mini, imazing.com/mini. Thank you so much to iMazing for being our sponsor today. All right. So, Jeff, I'm kind of focusing on you today because you've been cranking out this great content.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you. And you've been doing this cool stuff. I love that you've gotten into this whole Arduino thing, especially because we can do stuff with Arduino that ties back to our iPhones.
And yes.
You mentioned a while ago how you were going to be building a thermometer out of an Arduino, and you've done that. And now you've written an app that pairs back to your, or works on your iPhone and pairs up with your thermometer.
Yep.
And I want to hear about this, please.
Yeah. So that was the whole idea, was to create this Arduino thermometer that could communicate through Bluetooth Low Energy, or BLE. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. I had it created, and I had it talking over the serial port, the USB port, and mm-hmm. then I set out to see what I could do about talking to my iPhone. And I found that there's a whole world of stuff out there. What I ended up doing was I ended up using a web page, basically. I created a web page with JavaScript that could talk to that would be able to talk to the Arduino. And then I used Apache's Cordova to port that particular web page into something that iOS could run.
So just to make sure I've got this straight, you started by coding a web page.
Yep.
And then you used the tools that are just included with a Mac, if you know where to look, to transmogrify that into what's essentially an iOS app. Is that a good way to say it?
That's a good way to describe it. I'm trying to remember if Cordova was actually included or not. There wasn't a whole lot of sleeping that went on during this process.
Understandable.
I might have had to install Cordova.
All right. But still, it was something that if you had to install Cordova and you're comfortable doing some coding and you're comfortable with a little command line, then it's not a big deal to get Cordova on your Mac.
No, it's not a big deal at all. It's really easy to get Cordova on your Mac. It's really easy to create a simple JavaScript program that will run on your iPhone. Try to get it to do complicated stuff like talk over Bluetooth, and you run into problems of, well, it's just not very well documented.
All right. So here's what I'm getting out of this. You picked up a kit that lets you essentially cobble together some sort of sensor device. Mm-hmm. And then you wrote up a little program that ends up on your iPhone. And yep. Now you can monitor what this device is doing from your iPhone. Now, it could also be a device that does something else and you're controlling it from your iPhone.
Absolutely.
So what you have now is a foundation where you can build your own devices that you can use in or around your home.
Yep.
And then control them from your phone. So you have a way, especially now that we can do HomeKit on a personal level without having to get the Apple right. certification.
Yep.
You can start handcrafting, making artisan smart home devices and completely customize your smart home the way you want and not do it based on the products that are already available on the market.
Yeah. And that's where I'm going with it. I'm now teaching myself Swift so that I can turn around and rewrite this app in Swift, which is the native programming language that's used for iOS now. Mm-hmm. And then incorporate that into HomeKit.
All right. So this is very cool. And for me, it's very exciting. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where this path takes you. And it's also a very happy moment for me, because the reason I am so deep into the smart home and HomeKit world is because of Kelly.
I knew we would get there.
You were just waiting. Yeah,
I was. Like, as soon as you said you wanted to talk to Jeff about his Arduino, I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, you knew it was coming. Yeah, so Kelly was totally an enabler. It all started with the Wemo switch and
magical ift commands, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
And it gave me the what Kelly did was turn me on to the fact that I can take things that shouldn't work together and make them do cool things.
Mm. And that's what I would suggest, like, to piggyback on that. I would suggest that that's a thing that works with Arduino sensors and stuff. you know, what Jeff got, what could be used to sense a wide variety of things. So if there's a place in your house that you need to know about is a light on or off, or is something in one of these two particular states, there is probably a way with one of these little Arduino boards, maybe a Raspberry Pi, that you can set up a little system that will let you find that out. And not only find that out, but find that out by asking your phone assistant what the deal is. Mm-hmm. So currently the nut that I am trying to crack in this space, and I want to put this out to our listeners because I would love to find out if somebody has solved this already, is my mail comes at widely varying times each day. And I'd like to know when the mail gets here. And I'm most of the way there mentally with, if I get a sensor, I can find out from like a, you know, like an alarm sensor for a window, I could find out when the sensor disconnects and reconnects. And now I'm trying to figure out what the back end is to push that notification to my phone. So if this is something that you've already done in some fashion or something like that, please let us know. Jeff's going to tell you how to get a hold of us at the end of the show. But the great thing with automation, and the greater thing now that the HomeKit stuff is basically available to everybody, is that if you have a problem like this, it is much easier to solve and then be able to manage just by asking your phones the right set of words.
Well, here's the trick, Kelly. Is your mailbox within Wi-Fi distance of you?
Yes.
Okay, then it's easy. I could have that set up for you in a day and a half.
Oh my gosh.
See, this is why I was so excited about this, because Kelly, I already knew about your mailbox dilemma because you've told me about it before.
Yes.
And with the stuff that you've been experimenting with, Jeff, I just saw a great opportunity here. And knowing that Kelly is now having to dig into smart home technology in a way she wasn't before pleases me to no end, since you're the person that got me into this.
So now here's the thing, is that Jeff was talking about specifically, Jeff Gamet was specifically talking about having an issue with how do I get the air conditioner to turn on, or, you know, because like by the time I feel like it's hot here, it's already kind of too late for the air conditioner. And so I said, if you put a Wemo switch on that, you could have it trigger based on the temperature that it gets from a weather station near your house. And the thing is, like, Jeff had me, and I happened to know that because I use the weather channel on IFT at my house for heating and cooling. It tells me, it sends me a text to go open and close the windows based on the temperature.
Yeah.
So, because I don't have an air conditioner. So one of the great things about it is that you can set up those kinds of triggers, but you sort of have to have a sense of adventure if you don't have somebody already to ask about this. You know, go to the IFT channel or go look up the thing that you think might be the device for that, and then take a look at what sort of options people have used, because there's tons and tons and tons of user forums out there where people are going, here's the wacky stuff that I do with my Wemo switch, or here's the magic that makes IFT and my Hue lights do this thing that makes my life better, or, you know, all these kinds of things. And so if you just sort of go out there and do a little bit of Google searching, user forums are really good because somebody will say, this is how I solved it. And then usually someone else will say, this is how I solved it, which is slightly different. And maybe there's one that's tailored to you. It might be a little easier to use or a little bit less work. So, it's absolutely worth looking into, and I'm happy to answer questions if people want to get a hold of us. I'm sure our Jeffs probably are as well, because this stuff really does make small parts of your life a little easier. It sands off some of the rough edges of things like getting the air conditioner to come on at the right time or turn off at the right time, which also saves you power, things like that. So, Jeff, how can the people get a hold of us?
I love how you segued back to me like that. Thank you. So it's easy. You can shoot me messages on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can send me emails, observations@macobserver.com, or you can leave comments on the show notes. And those are all places that I'll be watching to see what you have to say. And also, thank you for the comments on yesterday's show about the icons getting kind of abstracted. And yes, I know it kind of looks like an A. The app store icon kind of looks like an A, but it still just isn't working for me.
It does look like an A.
Well,
it also looks like where I get to have a campfire at the state park.
And you West Coasters are just, you're not right.
And us mountain people, we're just way too picky, apparently. So
West Coast, Best Coast, simmer down.
Whatever.
Hey, don't make me separate you two. Anyhow, Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
And Jeff, thank you for being here as well.
It was a hoot, man.
It was a lot of fun to have both of you on the show. And iMazing Mini, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to the website, iMazing.com/mini. Get your copy of iMazing Mini. It is a fantastic tool for backing up your iOS devices. Like, it really is. And listeners, I am so glad that you are here today. Thank you for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.